This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. Challenged by the administration, federal agencies have sought to identify new and smarter ways to do business and move toward a government that is citizen-centered, results-oriented, and sustainable. To be successful in this area, federal agencies require support and assistance, and the U.S. General Services Administration, or GSA, through its Federal Acquisition Service, works to provide that support. It's taking a leadership role in providing centralized acquisition solutions while encouraging sustainable government that reduces waste, increases efficiency, lowers cost, and fosters emerging sectors of the economy. What is the value of a centralized provider like GSA and its Federal Acquisition Service? How does the Federal Acquisition Service foster government operations that are effective, sustainable, and transparent? How is the Federal Acquisition Service managing in an era of fiscal constraint? We will explore these questions and so much more with our very special guest, Stephen Kempf, Commissioner of GSA's Federal Acquisition Service. Welcome, Stephen. It's great to have you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Also joining our conversation from IBM is Ken Beecher. Ken, welcome.
Great. Thanks.
Steve, before we delve into specific initiatives, I'd like to start off learning a little bit more about your organization. Can you briefly describe the mission and continued evolution of the U.S. General Services Administration's Federal Acquisition Service?
Sure. Well, I think it's important to understand first that we're a cost-reimbursable organization, largely. So we earn our business by supporting all the other agencies in supporting their mission going forward. We provide about $55 billion worth of cost-reimbursable work to other agencies, everything from paper clips to hybrid vehicles to large complex IT solutions and even the acquisition support to get them there. So a pretty broad organization doing a lot to support every agency in the federal government.
So it's just a critical mission. I'd like to understand the operational footprint of your agency. Would you tell us more about the core lines of business? How are they organized and your overall budget, the number of employees and your scale of operation, geographical footprint?
Sure. We have about 4,000 employees. They're located all around the world. About a third of them are actually in the Washington, D.C. area, two-thirds spread out across the world in our regions. We even have folks in Korea, Kuwait, Afghanistan. So we have people all around the world. We have four basic business lines. The first one is the Assisted Acquisition Service actually provides beginning-to-end acquisition, so developing the requirements, getting a contract in place, and then managing the contract through closeout. Then we have our Information Technology Services, which is the IT component, runs the IT schedule, our largest program, the network services program, data and telecommunications, and the GWAC program, and then a few other items that they have. Our General Supplies and Services takes care of the other part of the schedules program, largely all of the stuff and management services and those kinds of things, professional services. Then they also have the general supplies, supply operations, all of the things that we have in our depots, everything, you know, from paper clips and office supplies to firefighting equipment, supporting the Wildlands Fire Program. And then they also have the personal property program. So the donation program, government agencies exchanging surplus property, and then the donation to state and locals, and in some cases other eligible parties. Then we also have the travel, motor vehicle, and card services program. Much of the government travel program, the card services, everything from the the travel cards to the purchase cards and the fleet cards supporting the government's fleet. And then, of course, there is the fleet, the government's fleet operations. We have about 225,000 vehicles in our fleet, and then we support many of the other agencies buying some of the other non-tactical vehicles each year. And that's basically our four business lines.
Yeah, so great description of the agency, Stephen. I'd like to focus more on your specific responsibility as the FAS commissioner. What are your duties and areas under your purview? But more interestingly, what's a day or week in the life of the FAS commissioner?
I think I have the most fascinating job in the federal government. It's really a nice place to sit. You really see how the whole government fits together and works. It really is an amazing place to be and see. And we touch almost every agency, so it's very interesting to be here. First and foremost is taking care of our own employees. In many ways, I'm a cheerleader for everything they do, helping them really set the vision for what we're doing, which is really becoming the leading source for government solutions and making sure that they have what they need to be successful. Then I spend a lot of my time with our stakeholders, OMB, Congress, helping them understand where we're going and what we're doing and trying to get them on board with what we're trying to do. I spend a lot of time visiting with customers so we can gauge how we're doing, what we need to do better, what we do need to do more of, and listening to them about what their needs are so that we can get ahead of where they need us to be. And then finally, a lot of time with industry, too. We have literally 20,000 or so industry partners. So spending some time with them to see, in the same way we do with our customers, how we're doing, what we should be doing better, you know, getting ahead of where we need to be in supporting them so that they're use GSA as their first choice to sell to the government.
So, Stephen, with such a robust portfolio, I'm interested in understanding what are the three top challenges you face in your position, and how have you sought to address those challenges?
I think first right now is really our systems. We're in the process right now of really revamping almost our entire suite of business systems. We're looking at our enterprise acquisition system. We're looking at the supply chain modernization, two of our major systems that really will help us deliver services more efficiently and effectively to our customers and really support our own employees in doing their job so that, you know, a contracting officer can work from home. And many of them have difficulty doing that because they're attached to some paper. So really bringing our systems up to speed so that we can be a little bit more nimble in our operations. I think the second thing that we're really looking at right now, and I think every customer service organization is doing this, really looking at how we deliver our services, being a little bit more innovative, customer-centric, and in our case, industry-centric, to make sure that we're doing the right kinds of things to support what's happening. And that's a big job. We're working on some quality standards and a lot of innovation work. And then the last thing is that's really consuming us this year is the budget. For the last couple of years, this has not been an issue. The government's been spending more each year. So for us, it was, you know, keep doing the same thing. We just keep capturing a little bit more of the market share. But for this year, it's a little bit trickier for us. You know, we have 20-some business lines. Some of them are probably going to go up. Some of them may be going down. So, you know, what kinds of things do we want to invest in as an organization, put more resources behind? What things do we might need to pull out of a little bit more? So, you know, it's a little trickier conversation this year internally about how we manage our business and what we're going to be doing to support our customers.
I'd be interested to understand, what do you think, given your career and your experiences, what are some of the characteristics of an effective leader, and who, more particularly, has shaped your management style and leadership approach?
I think if you allow people enough time, whether they're the employees, the industry, or our customers, if you listen to them, they will tell you what they need and what you ought to be doing. But I think people don't give that enough time. So I think that's really important to be an effective leader. And then, you know, taking that information and the awareness of what's going on and really developing a good vision about where you want to take the organization, one that the organization can get excited about and actually implement and do. And I think that's really important. But then also, too, at FAS, one of the things I saw that I thought was needed to be changed is breaking down some of the stovepipes across our organization for some really good reasons. One, to help our employees develop themselves. to give them greater opportunity, but also to help the organization do better and learn. So, you know, while there might be things happening in the networks program around transition, when we go to Electronic Travel System 2 and they go to a transition, what can they learn from what networks did so that we can be better over there? So there's a lot of things that we do across our organization that we need to share information to be better. So I think that's really important. And then, you know, as far as, you know, what I learned, I was very fortunate coming up in GSA that I often worked for very senior people, and I took a lot from each of them. It was really great to be able to watch other people and see how they led and be able to take what fit for me and what seemed to work for them, and then bring that into your own style. So a lot of the leaders in GSA I had the opportunity to work with and work for, and that's really been where I got most of my skills and abilities.
What is the value of a centralized provider like GSA and its Federal Acquisition Service? We will ask Stephen Kempf, Commissioner of GSA's Federal Acquisition Service, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. What are the seven management imperatives all government executives need to know? How is DoD improving its business operations? What is FAA's Next Generation Air Transportation System, or NextJet? How is New York City shaping a government that is customer-focused, innovative, and more efficient? And what about power, security, and leadership in the 21st century? Pick up the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine and find out. We bring you insights and interviews from government executives who are changing the way government does business. Download or order a free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Stephen Kempf, Commissioner of the Federal Acquisition Service within the U.S. General Services Administration. Also joining us from IBM is Ken Beecher. So, Steve, for our audience, GSA acts as a link between government and industry, facilitating over, I believe, $62 billion in acquisitions through its contracting vehicles. And FAS plays an integral role in making all of this happen. First, what is the value of having a centralized provider such as GSA? And how does FAS's strategic vision align to and support GSA's three strategic goals, which are innovation, customer intimacy, and operational excellence?
Sure. Well, those are tough questions. But I think initially, it's very important the role that GSA plays. And let me give you one really good example. We buy all of the non-tactical vehicles for the federal government. So we have people that really understand Detroit and what they're selling. They understand very deeply what's going on in the auto industry, in the vehicle industry. And they're able to buy better because they understand the market. They understand where the market is going. There doesn't need to be that kind of expertise across 100 agencies. And the value that GSA can provide is if we can do that in one place and amass the critical subject matter expertise within our organization and then take that and really leverage that across the federal government, that's really important for two things. One, the government gets a better deal and really takes advantage of that expertise. Secondly, it allows the agencies to use their resources to do the things that are critical to their own operations. So I think that's really critical value of what GSA does. Then talking about, you know, innovation, customer intimacy, and operational excellence, really key to our program. Again, really moving forward, understanding what the customer needs, what's available in the marketplace, and then bringing that out for the customers. So those, I think, are really important for us to doing a great job supporting our customers and getting it done right.
So, Steve, you mentioned earlier one of your lines of businesses, managing portfolio of contract vehicles, and that's as a means of procuring goods and services for your customer, the government. Would you outline the kinds of contracting vehicles that are available, as well as the specific business needs that best meet these types of vehicles? I guess what I'm driving at is what is the specific differences of those contract vehicles?
Wow, that's a really big question for us, and I think I could probably go on for about a year to get down into the weeds. But let's talk about a few of the really big programs that we have. I think most people understand and know about the Schedules program, and that is really our largest program. It's very, very diverse, and we sell everything on the Schedules from, you know, very small things like the office products to intricate IT systems. and complex professional services. And the Schedules program is largely a program that's out there for agencies to use on their own. And we provide some significant tools for them, like eBuy, where they actually can go in and use that system to actually procure advantage, where they can go in and check what's actually available and the pricing mechanisms behind that. Very big program with about $50 billion in sales across the government, which includes our VA partnership. But this is a self-serve model. The contracts are out there. We've been expanding a little bit of work on there to really provide some additional support to customers. So you'll see things like help around training, putting in place what we would probably call secondary solutions like strategic sourcing. So we've done things like the office supplies, where we've actually gone in and developed end-user solutions from the schedules where we get actually better pricing, where we've actually drilled down. Then we have programs like the GWAC program focused on IT solutions, a little bit different than the schedules program in that they're non-commercial offerings. And so we've defined what the skill levels are. We've defined what the offering and the scope of that contract is, and it's all around IT. A little bit more flexible with ODCs and other things that may come in as part of that solution that the provider has. And then we have other vehicles like network services around specific kinds of services around telecommunications and data transport, where we've really gone in and focused in on the pricing in a very specific segment like telecommunications. And then we have some other programs like supply operations, where we actually buy the goods and we actually have them in a warehouse, and then they're shipped out. So that's requisitions. So when the agencies order, they're not actually procuring anything. They're requisitioning. We own the products, ship them to them. So we have a very broad range of products and services, and that's just a few of them.
So on the flip side, it's very expensive for industry to get on these schedules, both large and small businesses. So what is GSA doing to reduce the proliferation of these contract vehicles?
Well, I think this is a really interesting question. People seem to really focus in on that. But I think over the last couple of years, you've really seen some of these really consolidate. Mm-hmm. So you've seen ITOP go out of business, Comets go out of business. So some of these interagency contracts actually have gone out of business. So I think some of this proliferation is actually going away.
As part of the largest telecommunications services transition ever undertaken by the federal government, FAS manages the conversion from the FTS 2001 crossover contracts to the now networks contracts. This is a very complex program. It involves 135 agencies, more than 50 services, and thousands of voice and data circuits. Will you tell us more about this program and how's it going?
Well, I think first, I think you assess this appropriately, that this is a very difficult task to do, and it's very complex. Each time we do this, it's even more complex than the time before, because the telecommunications offerings and circuits get more complex. The engineering around it gets more complex each time. The government's needs change rapidly. I mean, think about how much the government has online and available to the taxpayers versus what they've had years ago, and what kind of demands that would put on the data and the networks that each of the agencies has. So you have a very complex problem to solve, and then you're going from one set of vehicles to the next. So you have to have a good inventory about what you had, and then you have to have a good vision about where you're going. And some agencies have done a remarkable job of this and are saving a lot of money, and the transition is finished. So an agency like USDA. And then you have some that were having a little bit more difficulty with this. Some of them didn't have as good of an inventory. Some of them are a little bit more disjointed as an organization. So this was more difficult for them. This was also complicated by the contracting process. Last time, you could not protest if you didn't like the government's answer. You didn't have any place to go. This time, we had some protests that we didn't have last time. So this is a very difficult problem. I mean, just think about what you go through as you change a provider in your home. Is the phone company going to show up on time? Is the cable provider going to show up on time? Think about this. When you multiply that times 100,000, the problems get very difficult. And think about this as the government is changing over these things. You know, we run into really interesting problems, like we might have 7,000 lines that we don't know exactly who owns. Do we just turn those off? What happens when that line is actually the line that runs into, a data center, and that's the line to the fire department or the backup or something like that, that we don't see it being used, but it is very important. So all of these things need to be answered before you can turn them off, transition them over. So it's a difficult problem, but we're almost through this process. You know, we're at the very end. A lot of the things left are some of the big network transitions, and we're well into that process. And we expect most of that to be accomplished in the next year. And we'll be into the next phase, which will be Networks 2020 and how we design that service offering. And we're working with the customers and stakeholders in industry to understand and learn from the lessons from the last transition in order to get better at this for the next time.
And Steve, I'd like to pick up on the idea of helping agencies do stuff better. And recently, the administration issued an executive order promoting efficient spending by directing agencies to cut spend on items such as travel and devices. It's a twofold question. How can your agency assist federal customers to meet the requirements of the executive order? But more particularly, what kind of tips for trimming fat can you offer federal agencies?
Sure. There's a lot of meat there for us. And if we designed something, we would design this executive order. And we didn't, by the way. but there's a lot of opportunities for agencies. And we've been talking about this in terms of more for the mission. So there's a lot of things that GSA actually provides to the agencies that they can actually cut some of their costs and then have, you know, those savings available to do other things that are important to their mission. So when we look at that, we see things around travel. So our programs like FedRooms, which are oftentimes provide up to 11% or more savings on buying renting hotel rooms for the night when you're on travel. Understanding the CityPair program so that you buy the right fare and the cheaper fare depending upon what kind of trip you're going to be taking, where we can see substantial savings from, this is getting into the weeds here a little, Dash CA versus YCA fares. So do I need a refundable or non-refundable ticket? And we pay for that, you know, so we shouldn't be paying for that when we don't need, when we know we're going to take the trip by the non-refundable fare because you know you're going to do that. So how do we take and make better choices in travel? There's some programs that we provide that will help agencies do that. And then we're looking at other things too, like print management. And we basically have a new FSSI, a strategic sourcing initiative around print management. So how to manage your print operations in an agency. And it's not about just getting rid of devices. It's how to stop printing, how to use double-sided printing, how to choose different fonts that use less ink. How do we manage the contracts that we have for support services around them? It's not how much you pay for the device. It's the life cycle cost of your entire print operations. And how do you manage that? How do we cut the paper usage down? How do we stop using personal printers around the office and get the print fleet to where, you know, competing with the best in the industry? We've seen in some agencies that there's more devices than there are people. You know, how do we get down to best in class or, you know, 15 to 1 or even 8 to 1 in terms of devices to people? So those are the kinds of things that we've been offering and are available to agencies. And, you know, some agencies are further along than others. So some there, you know, there's great savings to be had. Others are well along on this path and maybe need to focus on other things.
You've mentioned a couple of times in our conversation the Federal Strategic Sourcing Initiative, FSSI. Could you tell us how this factors into your overall efforts to help agencies, federal agencies, make smarter decisions when they're purchasing?
Sure. And I think there's two things to be learned from this. One is the value of the government working together and collaborating to leverage its purchase across the entire enterprise. And that's important for a couple of reasons. One, when we work together, we get better pricing. And secondly, it's a better use of resources. So let's buy this once and leverage that actual procurement so we don't have, you know, 400 transactions instead of one. And I think that's really important. And then two, when we do these strategic sourcing, it gets back to something you talked about earlier. We have a commodity manager who really, really understands deeply what's happening in the marketplace so that we can understand how to buy in a way that's effective with respect to the industry partners. So we're buying it the way they're selling it, as close as we can in the government. So we have the opportunity to take advantage of where the market's going, buying the way industry is selling. And then part of this, too, is there's opportunities in the strategic sourcing for changing the way the government operates that creates better choices. So let me give you an example. We did the domestic ground delivery. The last vendor we had, about 10% of the purchasing that the government had actually was ground delivery. We've increased that in this contract to almost 40%. And that's important for a couple of reasons. First, it's cheaper. So when you send something overnight, does it really need to be there overnight, or just need to be sure it gets there? And a lot of times those things, you just need to be sure that they're there. So when do you need it overnight? When is it important to arrive tomorrow? And when is it important to arrive? And so making those choices. But part of that, too, beyond the expense, is the cost to the environment. So does it need to be on a plane or does it need to be on a truck? Mm-hmm. And there's significant sustainability for that. You know, so we can do some things that are good for the environment and help us in the pocketbook as well. So those are the kinds of things that I think we get out of strategic sourcing, and I think why it's important for us. And it's around that expertise, and it's around the leveraging and the government acting as an enterprise.
So I'd like to flip the question around a little bit around making smarter business decisions. And you mentioned the fiscal austerity that we're in right now. How are you folks planning to absorb maybe additional demands and increasing costs in the coming year without necessarily additional resources?
Sure. And that's you know, I talked about that in the beginning a little bit about, you know, one of the challenges for us this year is how do we respond to what's hitting the government across the board with respect to its budget? So where is the government going to need more from GSA? What kinds of things are sort of we need less of? So how do we shift our resources around? So we're looking at that very carefully. And part of it is, you know, we talked a little bit about upgrading our system so we can be more effective at what we do and get a lot more done using some automation, improvement in terms of our process, and then understanding the marketplace better to get better new products and services out there that the government's going to need as it moves forward to address some of these austerity issues. So part of it's going to be how we calibrate ourselves, where do we realign our resources to support our customers in what they need. And for sometimes, for us, it's going to mean not doing some things anymore, too. Government's not buying any more typewriters. How many typewriter contracts do we need to have under the schedules program? You know, so what kinds of things are we going to walk away from because there's just no market for it?
How is GSA's Federal Acquisition Service fostering government operations that are effective, sustainable, and transparent? We will ask Stephen Kempf, Commissioner of GSA's Federal Acquisition Service, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. What is FAA's Next Generation Air Transportation System, or NextGen? How is the U.S. Department of Homeland Security turning its one DHS vision into reality? What is New York City doing to shape a government that is customer-focused, innovative, and more efficient? And how is the DoD improving its business operations? Pick up the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine and find out. We bring you insights and interviews from government executives who are changing the way government does business. Hear from FAA Administrator Randy Babbitt, DHS Undersecretary for Management Raphael Boris, New York City Deputy Mayor for Operations Stephen Goldsmith, and Dave Winogrand, Assistant Deputy Chief Management Officer at DOD, Professor Joseph Nye and General Anthony Zinni on power, security, and leadership in the 21st century, and seven management imperatives that government leaders should pursue to be successful in an era of fiscal constraint. All of this and so much more in the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine. Download or order a free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Stephen Kempf, Commissioner of the Federal Acquisition Service within the U.S. General Services Administration. Also joining us from IBM is Ken Beecher. So, Steve, the mission of GSA is to foster an effective, sustainable, and transparent government. To that end, would you elaborate on your efforts to pursue sustainable business practices, incorporating the concept of sustainability in pricing products and services provided by FAS?
Yeah, I think one of the things, you watch sustainability in the marketplace, and this is a very fast-evolving concept. But I think if you look at most organizations, they really are focusing in on sustainability because it drives profit. It drives bottom line for industry. And much of the same thing is happening with the government too. And I think the best way to really look at this, the way we look at this, is the triple bottom line. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's about people, it's about profit, and it's about the planet. And, you know, and I think, you know, where we sit in terms of contracting and a lot of the things we do are around contracting and managing the supply chain. You know, contracting officers always are worried about the bottom line, the pricing. So how is sustainability helping the bottom line in terms of what things cost? That's always important. You know, we've always, as the government, looked at socioeconomic issues. So, you know, how does sustainability help in terms of, you know, business, innovation, the socioeconomic goals of the government? And then finally, you know, when we look at the planet, no matter when we do a contract, there's always a technical component of it. And more often than not, we're looking at sustainability as part of that conversation around what are the technical merits of competing options for the government. And as standards evolve and as the understanding of what sustainability means evolve, you know, the contracting officers are depending on us to help them understand what are the true real values of sustainability. So we have some really strong standards like Energy Star and EPEAT that are well known and easy to understand. Maybe easy is a little bit tough here, but they're better understood than some of the more evolving. Sure. So, you know, we're continuing to watch the marketplace to find those standards that are important and truly valuable to the government as a purchaser, and helping the procurement professionals and the program people really help them understand how to gauge them, how to use them in the procurements, and then what the government will get in terms of value from them.
So I'd like to change the focus a little bit to the federal supply chain and how you're seeking to modernize and green the supply chain by reducing waste and increasing efficiencies. And more particularly, what are some of the key challenges you're meeting in trying to do this? And are you leveraging any best practices from the private sector?
Sure. We have a whole group within FAS that, you know, as part of our value proposition, is actually working on this. So, and it's helping the agencies in terms of, you know, we have a greenhouse gas tool where agencies actually can see how they're doing. And part of that is the supply chain, but also trying to work across the agencies and with industry on normalizing what it means to be sustainable. Mm-hmm. So what are the emerging standards out there? How do we all talk about this collectively in the same way? So we do a lot of work with industry to try to understand how they're approaching this. Mm-hmm. So we can have an understanding of how we can look at sustainability in terms of, you know, it's not all just about greenhouse gas. Sometimes it's about water usage. Sometimes, you know, there's a lot of components to this. So depending upon where you are in the marketplace, you know, if you're a professional services firm, this looks different than if you're a manufacturer. And if you're a manufacturer in this segment, it's much different than if you're manufacturing IT or if you're manufacturing or providing food. I mean, so these things change from industry to industry to industry. So no one approach will work for everything. So there's a lot of nuance to this, and it's a very difficult problem to solve because there's no one answer that the government can give that everybody will be happy. And so we're really looking at this from a very broad approach and trying to do the right thing to help both the government and industry understand what the government's actually trying to do.
And not get locked into one cookie cutter approach that won't work.
Absolutely. Or will be outdated as this, you know, evolves. Because this is a very quickly evolving issue for the government.
Stephen, you know, as we're having this conversation, you know, we're talking about managing contracts, we're talking about supply chain modernization, telecommunications, networks. Yet another thing on your plate that you're responsible for is transforming the government's IT infrastructure through visualization and consolidation of data centers, and helping really agencies move into this cloud-first business model. What is FAS doing to help move federal agencies to the cloud?
Well, we've done a lot of things, but one of the things I want to talk about first is GSA's move to email, because I think we learned some really interesting things from that the government will benefit from. And I think this whole GSA-first strategy is really interesting, too, because we learned first that it could be done. So we moved our email to the cloud. Nothing horrible happened. And so that's important because then all of a sudden everybody was interested. It can be done. I'd like to do it. GSA, what did you learn? You know, so we can share some of those experiences. I think Casey Coleman, our CIO, has been out talking about that a lot. But then also we're developing some BPAs for the agency so that they can, we'll help them define some solutions that will be easier for them to buy as they go forward with this. And I think that's really instructive in terms of what we can really do to help agencies. So when we move into this, finding somebody to go first, documenting how that happened, and then creating some of the templates to actually do this. Because I think across the government, few want to go first, and everybody's really willing and anxious to go second. So I think that is really important for us in helping agencies move forward around this IT. So Mary Davey, who leads our ITS portfolio, really working closely with the CIO Council on some of these things like infrastructure as a service and FedRAMP to help define and align service offerings. And in many instances, we have a lot of options out there, whether it's the IT schedules, some of our GWACs, or the networks program, where we can buy almost anything anybody needs without a new contract, without a new vehicle. So it's really the how do you do it? What are the templates? What are the lessons learned to really help the agencies be effective and, you know, reduce some of the risk as they move forward with the IT purchasing?
One concern that not only agencies but, you know, U.S. citizens, public have is a secure cloud. You mentioned FedRAMP earlier. Can you discuss some of the other things that FAS is doing to alleviate not having a secure or having a secure environment?
Well, I think FedRAMP is really an important program because and when you look at security, I think leveraging our resources in order to define what secure is, and then actually assure ourselves that when we're buying things like under the cloud, that they are secure. So if we're going to buy a cloud solution as the government 30 times, one assessment will be good. As long as we can be assured that it was done right, they looked at the right thing. So we're working with NIST and others that defined what that is. So I think that's really important too, so that, again, here, leveraging the government security resources and the smart people that work on information assurance across the government, because we don't have as many of them as we probably need, and we need to leverage them as well. So, again, working across the agencies around this, and the folks from Dave McClure's office are leading this for GSA, really important. Another thing that we're looking at here is supply chain risk management. What kinds of things are we needing to look at with respect to actual products? The counterfeit products, are we getting what we actually are paying for in terms of real servers and those kinds of things? And I think we're doing some work with that across the agencies too. And this is an emerging issue for us, that we are sure we're getting what we ask for and that it's real products and that we can count on the warranties and the veracity of the products.
You mentioned leveraging resources, not just within GSA, but really throughout the public sector. And another cornerstone of successful performance management is, of course, support from leadership, but also good use of analytics. Would you elaborate on how FAS is using analytics to not only improve services and quality, but also identify new customers and services?
Well, I think right now we are looking at three particular things that we're doing with key demographics. First, our employees. We do something every year called the Q12 survey, which measures our employee engagement. Really important measure to us. How are our employees doing? How do they like their job? Are they able to use their best talents every day that they come into the workplace? Really important for us in terms of having the right people on the job. Secondly, this year we switched over to something called a customer loyalty survey versus a customer satisfaction survey. How happy are our customers with what we're doing? The key questions around that is, would you come back to us again? And even more importantly, would you recommend us to a friend? So we're looking at that, and we're getting back some information from them that we're using to improve our programs. So the business line leaders are looking at the data that we're getting to find ways to improve. And then lastly, we're launching a supply chain relationship survey. So talking to industry about what we should be doing better, how we're doing with them, you know, and this is important for us because we want to be easy to do business with. You know, if you had a choice about how to get to me as a supplier, we want them to say the best way to get to me is through one of GSA's contracts, and this is why, and there's a value to that. All those three things, those numbers are moving in the right direction for us. And if they continue to move in the right direction for us, that means our customers are going to be happy, the industry is going to be happy, what the government gets for what it's paying will improve too. So reduce the risk of success on projects and the overall results that the government gets from everything that they get from GSA. And that's where we're really moving as an organization.
Following along that, the importance of what you do, you know, reflecting on your leadership, would you tell us how you continue to keep your employees focused and motivated? Your administrator slams are well documented. So what is Stephen Kempf doing as far as keeping his workers and offices motivated?
I look to somebody like Daniel Pink, who talks about the surprising truth about what motivates us. And he talks about three things that are really important. One is autonomy. One is mastery, and the last thing is purpose. And one of the fortunate things about being in FAS is we have this sort of organization that has a lot of entrepreneurial capabilities. So we have a little bit of autonomy that's really unique to our organization, and the employees feel that. And it's a great place to work because you understand that. And they have the ability to use this mastery. So when we talk about being the subject matter expert or the commodity manager for the whole federal government, really interesting place to come and really develop those skills and have some results. And then the purpose. And, you know, we have some really remarkable people who've had some, you know, extraordinary opportunities.
And, you know, you did speak about tools right now. And really to that end, telework and virtual workplaces are changing the way government does its business. So would you elaborate on these workplace changes and their benefits?
Sure. This is really interesting to me when I talk about GSA goes first and FAS goes first. You know, I think our 1800F transformation is really one of those things. All of the agencies are trying to find ways to economize. And one of those ways is the space. You know, many of the private sector companies have really reduced their space and people are teleworking. So GSA is, I think, leading in this. So whether it's our work on telework and sharing it across the agencies about what we're doing, what we're learning, new policies that will be able to implement this, including the way we work with our unions in order to get this done. And then the space itself. So how do we get into collaborative space where we can change the way we work so that employees will be sharing more and seeing each other more in the office or not seeing each other more but still interacting when they're working at home. So, and again, here, GSA going first in terms of what we're doing with 1800F. So how we do this and set the example for the rest of the government to follow, I think will be really important. And, you know, from a FAS perspective, we're looking at this in terms of a way to change the way we do our work in order to increase collaboration, increase productivity, getting back to your earlier question about how do you do more with less. You know, you have smarter workers who work together better and then produce better results.
You know, as a follow-on, you know, we keep hearing FAS first. And from what I understand, GSA is willing to take risk, right? So what is your risk mitigation of being this first of an agency? And how can you learn from it and the like of communicating that to other federal agencies?
Well, I think two things. One, you know, what is an acceptable level of risk? You know, so I mean, you don't want to be crazy, and you don't want to do things that are going to break your organization. And the second piece of this is really around how can some of this risk help FAS move forward? You know, so what kind of risk do we want to take in order to improve our program?
What does the future hold for GSA's Federal Acquisition Service? We will ask its commissioner, Stephen Kempf, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.
Each edition of the Business of Government magazine has as its focus the core mission of the IBM Center, connecting research to practice as a means to improve public management. We do this by bringing together insights and perspectives blended with an equal measure of practicality and reflection from an array of government leaders, public managers, thinkers, and practitioners. Hi, I'm Michael Keegan, managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. In an era of fiscal contraction, today's leaders face unique challenges that present many difficult choices. It is a period that, while imposing many constraints, simultaneously confers as many opportunities to make a difference, introduce new ways of managing, explore pragmatic approaches, and pursue management imperatives that help government leaders perform in an ever-challenging, complex environment. In our latest edition, we bring you conversations with FAA Administrator Randy Babbitt, outlining the Next Generation Air Transportation System, or NextGen. Rafael Boris, DHS Undersecretary for Management, discusses how the department is turning its one DHS vision into a reality. Stephen Goldsmith, Deputy Mayor for Operations for the City of New York, discusses how the city is shaping a government that is customer-focused, innovative, and efficient. We offer perspectives on power, security, and leadership in the 21st century from Professor Joseph S. Nye, Jr. and General Anthony Zinni, former commander of the U.S. Central Command. Our forum presents seven management imperatives that government leaders must pursue to be successful in this new environment. All of this and so much more in the Spring-Summer 2011 edition of the Business of Government magazine. Download or order a free copy at businessofgovernment.org and find out how the business of government is not business as usual. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Stephen Kemp, Commissioner of the Federal Acquisition Service within the U.S. General Services Administration. Also joining us from IBM is Ken Beecher. So, Steve, I have the pleasure of talking to many of my guests about the use of collaboration and partnerships among agencies and with the private sector to achieve mission results. I'd be interested to understand how you folks are leveraging partnerships and collaboration to improve operation and achieve program outcomes.
Sure. I mean, we do a lot of this. And I think that, you know, the most visible way right now is some of our work on strategic sourcing. We're leveraging across the whole federal government. And, you know, in the rejuvenation or sort of regeneration of our Smart Buy program, we're looking at commercial software and buying it once across the whole federal government and leveraging the prices and again, using our expertise to understand the marketplace, get leverage in terms of the price. And then, you know, allow the government to use its resources to buy other things. And I think that that is really, really important going forward. We talked a little bit earlier about ComSatCom. And again, here, that same concept, you know, for discrete products and services in some cases, you know, really having a core team. And a lot of times it's not GSA alone, but it's GSA in conjunction with its customers and some of their subject matter expertise. You know, so when we're buying commercial satellite solutions, whether they be the commercial or something a little bit more specific, you know, being able to leverage limited government resources and expertise to do the right thing for the government and get the right prices. It is so important for our government going forward to be able to do this and to provide the value to the taxpayer that they really need. And, you know, we continue to work with the, you know, the government councils, whether it be the CIO Council, the CAO Council, those kinds of bodies to, you know, gauge what's going on, understand the marketplace, and understand our customers' concern. And then again, reaching across to industry and industry partnerships too to understand what's going on there in order to, you know, mold the programs in a way that's useful for our customers and effective for dealing with our industry partners.
Given GSA's critical mission, you discussed earlier the Q12 survey. Can you discuss some of the findings that you received or the findings that you gathered from the survey? But also, what are you doing to ensure you have or you continually have a well-trained and technical workforce?
Sure. I think one of the things we see from the Q12 is that, you know, one of the important things is good managers and good supervisors and how that actually helps. So, you know, one of the things we do with the Q12 is actually follow it up with action plans. And we see that, you know, the work units where they go to the employees and they say, what are the things we need to work at as an organization? And, you know, I do that with my leadership team. And it's not what I want to do. It's what they want to do. You know, and sometimes we work on things that we're good at so that we stay good at them. And sometimes we work at things that we need to do a little bit better on so, you know, we improve our performance there. And I think most of our work teams that are doing that, we see their scores rise because we're paying attention to what's important to our employees and what they want to have done. And we have some work areas that do tremendously good job of this, and we have some that need to work at this a little bit more. So we're trying to get, you know, raise that level across our entire organization that we continue to work on making our teams more productive and helping our employees do great things. We talk about specific things we're doing. One of the things that I've been wanting to do and we have been doing is finding ways to help people move around our organization. I tell this story, and I think it's really telling. When I first took over this job, I was in the elevator with somebody who had just come back from a detail. And she was so excited about going back to her new job and was happy with what she brought to where she was on detail. And it was great. You know, she learned something, left some information behind, and went back to her job energized. And when I tell that, you know, I tell another story where somebody moved and they said, well, what did they do? That somehow moving around the organization is a punishment. And when I say that, people laugh because that really was our story for GSA. If somebody moved, something bad happened, so they had to be moved. So, but now we're changing that, you know, so those developmental assignments, opportunities for people to try or do something new, and then exchange that information across the silos that we have in our organization to break down some of that, to share some of the information, to bring some new and different better practices to different parts of the organization. That's happening. You know, whether it's, you know, teams we have working across programs and portfolios, or just, you know, opportunities like we have sustainability fellows that come into our what we call our acquisition organization, acquisition management, learn about sustainability for 6 months and then go back to their job. And while they're there, they do some good work on acquisition. Helps keep our costs down because we don't have to put permanent people on sustainability. So creating those kinds of opportunities across our organization. The next ones we're going to be doing are innovation fellows. You know, people who come in and work on innovation, learn it, go back to their organization. So it's great for our organization, great for our people, and I think in the end, great for our customers.
It sort of spreads the seed of innovation throughout what you folks are doing, leading by example.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Let me ask you to take your crystal ball out, you know, and look more towards the future. Would you give us a sense of some of the key issues that will affect your office government-wide over the next couple of years?
Sure. First, the budget, of course, is key. You know, there's going to be some need for us to do some new things, to do some more of some things, to really, I think when we talk about strategic sourcing and, you know, being easy to use, we really need to turn that up. You know, innovation, some of the new things coming out. You know, we're looking at integrations, a professional services contract, really important for what the government really needs to help work through some of the issues it's going to need to streamline itself and improve its performance. I think that's really an important challenge coming up for us. Secondly, I think the important really need for data and analytics. You know, so we're looking at our government travel management information system. How do we really transform travel in the federal government to take advantage of what we know about how the government spends? How do we improve the city pair program? How do we leverage the buying of hotels and rental cars as part of that? And how do we manage travel as, you know, a program within agencies and across the federal government to really maximize the value in a way that we haven't yet? Each year we get a little bit better at this, but how do we take advantage of opportunities like that to really change what's happening so that the government can still do the travel it needs to do, but spend a whole lot less money on it and get better results? So I think those are the kinds of things that we need to do. And then finally, I think innovation. You talked a little bit about that. And for us, that means I talk about it in terms of above and below the line innovation, above the line. New offerings, new products. How do we understand what the government needs and be there for them with what they need? And then how do we improve our current operations below the line innovation so that, you know, our services are easier to buy, easier to understand, that the government has better data in order to make choices that will, you know, reduce their risk, improve the performance, improve the price and value that they're getting in each transaction they make when they come to GSA. And that is so important for us being successful in the future and helping the government be better at what they do and drive better value for the taxpayer.
So on another note, how are you preparing your agency to meet these evolving challenges and seize these opportunities?
Well, part of this is, you know, first hiring the right people. You know, how do we get the right kind of people into GSA and FAS in particular to really be able to meet these needs? And we've done some really interesting things around this. Hiring people, they work out of their homes. You know, we talked about our fleet purchasing. Some of the acquisition people we hired actually sit in Michigan. And that's where, some of the private sector's woes were a boon to us. So, you know, some people who worked in the auto industry as their lead purchasers now work for us, really understand that marketplace, are able to share that information and do a better job. So finding the right people that are important. And I think, you know, we continue to work on that in terms of finding the right expertise, getting them into FAS, and then letting them do their, you know, great work. So I think that's really important. The training is, I think, important. This year we're doing the year of negotiations across GSA. Certainly a good skill that we all need to get better at. You know, we spend a lot of money on training. You know, while a lot of agencies cut training when times get tough, we still spend a lot of time and money on our employees to get them to be up to speed, to be able to do the kinds of difficult work that they take on every day. And it's important. And I think it shows both in, you know, how happy they are and some of the results that they produce for us. So I think that's really important.
So, Steve, I'd be interested to know, would you provide some advice for folks who are considering a career in public service?
I would encourage anybody who's interested to apply. I think I can speak from my own perspective and my own experience. I did not know when I was getting into, when I got into public service, but it has been a remarkable career for me. I've been able to do things that I would have never expected even happened in the government, to see things, to touch things that I know have an impact on everybody's life in America, and maybe a couple times in your career. And that's really remarkable to be able to do that and walk away from that. So to have impact on things that improve people's lives. You know, I think when people talk about government service and government work, and I even talked to this when I talked to our industry partners that are help GSA, some of the work that you're doing for the government is so unique and so interesting and so impactful that this is the place where you really want to highlight when you come and work for us, you get to do these things. And I say that too when I talk to employees or when I talk to groups where they're talking about what's your advice for people coming in. There is such opportunity, and you know, just be aware of the opportunities that are available to you in the government, because you can do such great things in the government, and it really provides some remarkable opportunities for people. So it's a great place to go. It's a great place to be. I think, you know, people that work for the government are so dedicated to what it is they do every day, whether it's, you know, little things or really huge things. And I think the dedication is really remarkable.
Well, Steve, I want to thank you for your time today. This has been a rich and fulfilling and insightful conversation. But more importantly, Ken and I would like to thank you for your dedicated service to the country.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And if people want to know more about GSA, you can always find everything you need on gsa.gov. But more importantly, coming up this May, if you're interested in anything happening at FAS, you will find it at our GSA Expo, which this year is in San Antonio from May 15th through 17th. And if you need to find out more, it's at expo.gsa.gov.
This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Stephen Kempf, Commissioner of the Federal Acquisition Service within the U.S. General Services Administration. My co-host from IBM has been Ken Beecher. Be sure to join us next week for another informative, insightful, and in-depth conversation on improving government effectiveness. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Michael Keegan, and thanks for joining us.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.
What is the U.S. Department of Energy's human capital and workforce strategy? How is energy tackling the human capital challenges it's facing? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and much more with Michael Caine, Chief Human Capital Officer with the U.S. Department of Energy. That's this week on the Business of Government Hour.